Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning, welcome to the Life Science morning. Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there, you can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. This show is all about science in all its different forms. You've got Julie and Paulie live in the studio as usual. We'll be talking to our PG later in this hour. I think he's talking about fusion, is he?
Yes.
He's picked a great track though, but we won't tell you what it is. It might be something to do with the weather though, of course. We've also got our guest speaker for this week, and indeed, whenever there are five Saturdays in the month, it's Phil Muffett from the Mexpert and Swinton Astronomical Society. I'm going to ask him to talk about cold water swimming as well, if he's up for it, because that's been in the news this week. So elsewhere in the news this week, Paul?
Right, as you know, it's been a warm week, not so warm as it was on the Monday, but as well as taking care of yourself during hot weather, be sure to keep an eye on your pets and also look out for any wildlife that may be struggling to cope with the heat. For pets such as cats and dogs, be mindful of the times you take them out for walks, keep them hydrated and provide cooling mats. For birds, this is what we do, put out makeshift ponds or bowls filled with water to compensate for dried up water sources. Keeping your plant pots and garden well watered could also make a huge difference to pollinators.
Elsewhere in the news, and this is a very interesting one, social media is the new smoking, medical leaders have declared. A report by the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges warns of an epidemic of harm to children because of social media and smartphone use, putting further pressure on the government to commit to a ban for under-16s. The Academy of Medical Royal Colleges has also called for doctors to routinely screen for harms linked to social media when they first assess a child. Half of the doctors surveyed by the Academy said that at least once a week they treated a child whose mental distress or physical harm was due to online content. Interestingly, we've cycled in this morning and down where the old markets used to be, a lovely poster has appeared, a very interesting one, black and white sketch drawing of a person looking at the phone. The headline is The Modern Thinker, But if you look at what's written on the person's head, it says, I feel bad about myself. And I thought, wow. Very, very interesting stuff. So something,
heavy.
Yeah, well, but it's a big issue at the minute, this issue about people being addicted
to
technology.
Maybe we could get Paddy back in and have a chat about
Yeah, indeed.
So, meanwhile, three students from India have won this year's Earth Prize for developing a solution to tackle water-based microplastics. We're always talking about these, aren't we? They have created a powder made from waste tamarind seeds, which attracts microplastics, drawing them together and making them easier to remove from water.
Interesting. And next up is a story that was actually in the press last November. It was in the Times. It was written by their science editor called Rhys Blakely. But it's a great story, and I've been meaning to do it for ages. So it's titled The Whale That May Hold Secrets of Far Longer Life. So it starts by saying humans spend fortunes on lotions, supplements and fads that promise to slow aging. But the bowhead whale, which is found in the Arctic waters, has no such worries. It lives for centuries, rarely succumbing to cancer or other ailments that cut our lives short. So how does such a massive creature, weighing some 80 tons with billions upon billions of cells, how does it stay healthy for so long? Could its biology offer humans clues on how to defy aging itself? So scientists at the University of Rochester in New York think they have found the answer. In a study they published in Nature, the journal, they have identified a protein known just as CIRBP that appears to play a key role in prolonging the whale's life. The molecule, short for cold-inducible RNA-binding protein, helps repair damaged DNA, a defense that fends off cancer. When the researchers added the whale version of that protein to human cells, they repaired broken DNA more accurately. In fruit flies, it even extended the lives. So Professor Vera Gorbunova, who led the study, believes the results could point to a treatment that allows future generations to live longer than the typical human lifespan. With some bowhead whales believed to be at least 250 years old, the species is the longest-lived mammal. That's a quiz question if ever you heard one. So bowhead whales is the longest-lived mammal. Amazing. And it's a superstar of longevity research, said Dr. Alex Kagan, an evolutionary geneticist at the Wellcome Sanger Institute in the UK. By studying the mammals, scientists hope to untangle a biological puzzle known as Peto's paradox. I've never heard that before. Big animals, such as whales, should technically face higher cancer risks than small ones, simply because they have more cells dividing over longer lifespans. But for some reason, or combination of reasons, they do not. The study found that the CIRBP protein helped to fix the most perilous form of genetic damage, so-called double-strand breaks, to the DNA double helix, the structure inside the cell that carries genetic information. Bowhead whale cells perform these repairs both more efficiently and more accurately than those of humans or mice. As a result, its DNA stays pristine for an unusually long time. So Dr. Alex Kagan, who's an evolutionary geneticist at the Wellcome Sanger Institute in the UK, said the findings were intriguing and pointed towards new therapeutic angles that could be explored. The clue to why whales have so much of this protein may lie in their very cold Arctic habitat. Production of the protein rises when temperatures fall. If we just lower the temperature a few degrees, cells make more CIRBP, the researchers said. That detail sparked speculation. Scientists were already asking whether mild exposure to chilly temperatures could help protect humans from disease. If it does, could the human version of CIRBP protein play a role? Lifestyle changes, things like taking cold showers might contribute and might be worth exploring. So the team, the next bit of research the team are going to look at is testing whether CIRBP protein or drugs that activate its production reliably and safely improves DNA repair in smaller, shorter-lived mammals. I thought it was a great story.
Thank you.
bit of Foreigner there with Cold as Ice. And we played that because we're talking about the bowhead whale may hold the secrets of a far longer life, all to do with living in cold waters. Of course, listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Good morning, and how's your week been? Hot?
Yeah, well, we've been very busy because we've got a family of magpies, and our cat is on constant patrol.
Oh, it's not happy, is it?
We're trying to keep them apart, so we've kept us busy.
Brilliant. So what's caught your eye in the science news this week then, Paul?
Well, there's a lot of stuff on the downside, but then there's some stuff on the upside. You mentioned about microplastics. One of the things that we've done recently is to buy a filter for our drinking water. Because we were buying bottled water, and that wasn't always good, because a lot of that now comes in plastic bottles. So we started to filter the water, and I just thought it was probably an interesting thing for people with microplastics. To say that as of this year, there's no UK legal limit or standard for microplastics in your drinking water.
Ooh.
So the Drinking Water Inspectorate's not set monitoring requirements for microplastic particles in the UK yet. So it's something that scientists are already sort of recognising as a potential issue. And I think that's why we sort of decided that we'd try filtering the water. It does make a difference to our water, and you'll notice it when you make tea. You don't get a scum on tea that you do with the straight out the tap water. So there's something going on with that, and I say it's one of the downside things that's around. Be aware of what you're drinking, even when you're drinking tap water. That's potentially got microplastics. The other thing, I think you mentioned about the whales, and a bit of news from the Antarctic, is that the loss of the ice cover is progressing, and one of the side effects of that disappearance is putting pressure on the system that generates plankton.
Yeah.
And that's really going to impact on the whales. They're already seeing some massive journeys being travelled by whales from their breeding grounds to their feeding grounds. And it looks like that could be a growing problem for them because of the impact of climate change. So, realistically, there's lots of things. Looking again at antibiotics, there's pressure on antibiotics. The hope is that by using artificial intelligence to do some of the research and the scientific study on data, that they can start to improve those. But there's an increasing problem for clinicians trying to treat things, that the tools that they were using for that are getting outdated. So there's a big push for particular sort of treatments, and we keep hearing stories about septicemia in hospitals. There are lots of pressures on the world, I think, is the sort of...
It seems... A lot of people we know, you go into hospital for something, you come back, you've caught something.
With something worse.
You've caught something in an hospital, yeah?
Yeah, it's terrible. So I think, apart from doom and gloom, I thought we'd have a bit of good news.
Yay!
So, looking on the University of Sheffield website, there's something about powering the future. And it's a new initiative in UK schools, a programme to inspire future fusion pioneers.
Oh!
So it's a new nationwide fusion programme set to spark children's curiosity into technology that could provide limitless clean energy and turn the dream of a low-carbon world into a reality.
Interesting, and, yeah.
It's all about future scientists and engineers, and it's part of the sort of STEM programmes. And saying that these new young people will play a crucial role in delivering sustainable energy for generations to come. And they're going to benefit from this new programme that's been launched by University of Sheffield and the UK Atomic Energy Authority. So the initiative is aimed at primary school children to spot their curiosity in fusion, and that's the technology that replicates the power of the sun to provide safe, clean, limitless energy, they say. And the national rollout follows a successful pilot in schools in North Nottinghamshire, and that's close to the site where the UK's first prototype fusion power plant will be constructed.
Oh!
So, it's interesting. So, it's called Step Forward, the primary school scheme, and they launched it recently, and it's they're saying that fusion on their scale is a chemical reaction that powers the sun, and scientists here on Earth are trying to replicate on a smaller scale the system that could provide clean, safe, limitless energy. And they say fusion power plants are currently in development, and the UK's first step fusion at the site in North Nottinghamshire is aiming to make the technology a reality by 2040.
Wow.
So, and the thing about, again, on the downside of news this week, there's an awful lot about the number of young people not in education or employment.
Yes.
Neat.
And this is really going back to a level where you maybe would be surprised that they're trying to get children interested in primary school levels so that they can look forward to a career possibly as an engineer or a scientist later on in life.
Yeah, we saw something about that this week. They're called NEETs, aren't they? Not in Employment, Education or Training.
Yes,
and it's
correct.
It's high. It's a high number, isn't
16
it?
16 to 24
well,
years.
Over a million people in that sort of category. And watching the news this morning, there's some terrible sort of problems in Thanet down in Kent, where a lot of young people who looked like they fit in this category, because of the heat wave, are going to the seaside and causing mayhem.
Oh,
that. They're actually going into shops to shoplift. They're fighting in the streets. So it's kind of just put me in mind of the sort of background to Quadrophenia, the mods and rockers back in the day. But
that's interesting because, you know, this thing about shoplifting, it's a massive issue, isn't it, now? You've got gangs going into shops and just...
Yeah, well this is absolutely hundreds of teenage kids going into towns and going into things like tea shops, sitting around and driving out the people who normally would be in there because of their terrible behaviour.
Good grief.
So, they say, yeah, there is a link towards the heat. It does sort of promote sort of bad behaviour more. But, you know, they're looking for ways to funnel those older children now into new areas. So this initiative is a great sort of initiative. I think ran a pilot in 21 primary schools close in North Nottinghamshire to the Step Fusion site, So that's in partnership with Bassett Lower District Council. And Dr. Alison Buxton, who's the Senior Innovation Fellow at the University of Sheffield's School of Education, said the pipeline for future scientists and engineers begins much earlier than university or even secondary school. Mm. So it's great that they're actually trying to engage kids at that age to really knock some of the underpinnings of this particular problem that the government's trying to come up with initiatives to deal with it. And again, listening to Question Time, I think it was the other night, they were discussing what can be done. And quite a lot of it comes to, well, okay, there's not a lot of money for doing this, so how about voluntary work? How about things? I mean, there's the whole problem of the attachment to mobile phone technology and social media with young people. There's a reference back to COVID has caused a lot of problems.
You look at that age group and you can see why that might be the case.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there is a genuine fear that they can end up being a lost generation. And if they're lost, then they're saying that that's exactly the kind of thing that's feeding into this terribly bad behaviour.
It's so, that, it's like, it goes back to the 70s, doesn't it? The punk era, no future. You know, because kids are growing up, we've had COVID, you've got all this AI taking jobs, so they say, you've got a smartphone epidemic. People have lost certain skills. People are going to university, emerging with £50,000 worth of debt, and they still can't get a job.
Well, you know, again, one of the things that I saw this week was to say that a lot of these young people who are in this sort of area have been applying for thousands of jobs today.
Yeah.
But there's a problem because artificial intelligence is being used by a lot of graduates to create the perfect submission application for a job. So the employers are really having a problem to differentiate people who truly have got potential from people who are using the best tools in artificial intelligence to present a facade.
Yeah, well, this is where face-to-face interviews and look at the whites of their eyes, so to speak. That's what somebody said to me.
Well, again, the problem with that is a lot of these people are saying they're making all these applications and are really upset because they don't actually get a reply, because the artificial intelligence sorts the applications and passes those through to the people who are looking to employ someone.
Yeah.
So they're grading the thing effectively, marking their own homework, the artificial intelligence systems. So it's really sort of a difficult thing. But I think this is a great initiative from University of Sheffield and a move towards bringing children into a very sort of high-tech area. It's got to be one of the future areas for jobs. And I just think that that's a positive side to the things that really are around at the moment, where there's an awful lot of negativity that we can look at. And I think that, that there really is a problem if we've got potentially a million young people, I think, under 25, who are not in employment education, that there's really got to be some way forward. And I think, again, the use of technology by a lot of people is contributing, apparently, to their sort of mental resilience.
Yeah.
So it's a real difficult one.
Yeah. I mean, as I said earlier on, that poster that we saw this morning, that's just appeared. And I think that might be a University of Sheffield billboard. There's some very interesting posters go up there. And, you know, it's of somebody, just an image of somebody looking at the mobile phone, and it says, "The modern thinker." And the thing on the top of its head says, "I feel bad about myself."
Yes. Yeah. I think, you know, we're all linked in this world and in society. And the problem is sometimes you can become blinkered into your version of things, but it is a problem. And you can say, well, you know, that's the problem, the listless, yeah. You can list a lot of downsides to it, but what's the solution? And I think that increasingly that's the question that's being asked, and we're coming up short in terms of solutions for those young people. So, yeah, I think there's a whole sort of thing that goes back to the rechanneling a lot of young people through the education system into university. They went through that, took whatever courses they did, but they were told that basically that would make them more employable for better circumstances. So they came out with great expectations to move forward. And the problem is that we've had things that happen at the sort of government level. Some choices put pressure on employment, which makes pressure downwards. And, you know, flip that coin, and there are people in their 80s now who've come back into work full time. So, realistically, I think a lot of young people are told they're never going to be able to get a pension like pensioners have got now. So there's a wedge being driven between the sort of young people today and older people based on circumstance.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Yeah, but good old University of Sheffield, eh? Always in there.
Yeah, well, that's a great thing. I think I'm going to lose my voice. So
I know. So you've chosen a fantastic track by the Beatles. What could it be? Off the Abbey Road album. I'll give away that much.
Well, here it comes. Let's have a listen.
Yay! Okay, bye-bye, Paul. We'll speak Monday. Glory Days Rock Show 1-3. Cheers. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Comes the sun, and I say it's all right. All right.
beautiful there. Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, actually written and sung by George Harrison, 1969, my words.
And he wrote that song while playing truant from an Apple's record company meeting.
And it was in Eric Clapton's house. What a bit of name dropping that.
And he also brought in a Moog synthesizer to play that on
just
as well.
To show off. So that was off the Abbey Road album. Of course, listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning from 11 until 12. We should have Phil Muffett on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. Good,
are you awake? Only just.
I've got matchsticks holding me out.
We've been tired this week, but you're just crazy, aren't you, Phil? You've been everywhere.
We have.
I know. So first off, for people who don't know who you are, of course, I don't know how that's possible, but you are a member of Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. Excellent. But before we talk about, I think we're going to talk about the Blue Moon, possibly the Blue Origin rocket as well.
Yeah.
But first off, I'd just ask if we could talk about cold water and swimming, because you're a member of Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, of course.
Yes.
And right. There's been a lot in the press, because it's been so hot. About children and people swimming and getting into trouble.
Yeah, we've already had one fatality this month at Rotherham Valley.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So, we do dragon boating, kayaking, paddleboarding, and lots of other things, open water swimming at Manvers. Let me just stress, it is all lifeguard covered. We have a safety boat, and we have experienced people out there, and people buddy up. The problem is, and we had this last week, it was on Thursday when we were practicing for our dragon boat race. We was up and down the lake, and we had teenagers swimming out into the middle of the lake while there was craft zooming around the lake, and we had to like kick some people off. Now I understand people want to get in cool water, and you can't stop people getting in a lake, bearing in mind Manvers is a private lake, and there's places like Thriborough Country Park. You can't stop people going in the water, but don't go out of your depth. The problem is you get cold water shock, you get cramp, and you freeze up and you sink and you die, and there's nobody there to save you. When people go out at Manvers, even experienced swimmers have buddy swimmers, or they have a float. Mm-hmm. When I go swimming, and even with a wetsuit on, I take a float out with me, because I've come unstuck even in a wetsuit, and my float saved me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the ladies in the lake actually helped save me as well, because you only need to swallow some water and things go badly very, very quickly. And I've had experience of this. So, it's dangerous.
And as you always say, you know, if you want to go swimming, it's better to do it in a controlled environment, isn't
Absolutely.
It? You know, and you know, this weather, people are drinking and get, you know, a bit giddy, and it all seems like a good laugh, doesn't it, until it goes wrong.
And it is, but the thing is, you've got to keep safe first. Otherwise, you will die, and people are dying.
Yes. Yeah, it has been all over the news. It's because, I think last time we spoke, you said that the water temperature at Manvers Waterfront Boat Club is about 19, or it was 19 degrees.
Well, we hit a new record the other week, and we got up to 20.4. Which was a whole 2 degrees higher than a previous record.
Really?
For that day in the month, yeah. So it was record at the moment, 25.1, which was a few years back, when we're having 40 degree temperatures, and I think we got to 25.1, and I think that, I can't remember if it was August or September, so we're creeping up there, so it might be a new record again this year. But yeah, that sunshine, it doesn't have to warm that water up.
Yeah, but as we said, be careful, and if you do, don't go out your depth, and make sure there's a group of people, and you know, you're not just going in on your own.
Yes, well at Manvers Lake, experienced swimmers, paddleboarders, kayakers, they all have to wear a life jacket.
Yes.
And these people do this all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a club rule. So these people that go swimming in our lake are breaking our rules, and they're not even members. So we kick them off the water.
Oh, blimey.
I mean, you can't stop people paddling. I mean, I get that, absolutely. Going up to your waist, but don't go swimming off out of your depth because you're going to die.
Yeah.
We don't want fatalities.
Nobody to save you. Amazing.
Well, we don't see anybody dying.
Yeah, exactly. So what are you going to start off with first then? Blue Moon or...?
Yeah, well, that's another thing. So this Sunday, we've got a Blue Moon swim. So this year, we've started doing a full moon swim. So I think they're trying to swim on every full moon.
Wow.
The year. So on Sunday, we've actually got a full moon on the 31st of May, which means we've had two full moons this month.
Oh, you've gone a little bit. You went a little bit. We lost you a bit there. What are you up to? Nodding off.
Just a bit. Yeah. So we've got a flower moon on Sunday evening. Now the moon doesn't rise until about 10 o'clock, and it's really close to its most southerly transit period. So it'll be really low in the sky. I think it rises about 10 o'clock. And it'll be due south about midnight, and then it'll start setting in the southwest after that. So I think our swim session's between 10:30 and 11 o'clock.
Oh, wow! Oh. So how many of you are going swim?
Well, I don't know yet. So this is a signed on event. You can't just rock up and jump in and have a swim round. So we have it's a club event, and I think we'll probably have 100 odd people.
Really? Wow. Of course, it's all controlled as well, and safety's there.
So 10 o'clock, 10:30, it should be still twilight.
Wow. It's
just rising about 10 o'clock, and we should be able to see down the lake. So, yeah, it should be a good evening.
I presume because it's a blue moon, and if it's a clear sky, is that going to stop you seeing other things in the sky?
This week, I've struggled doing any I've done some lunar work this week with my telescope. Managed to get some lunar photos, but I'm still learning with my new camera how to photograph the moon properly, because you need to get the settings right to be able to capture the moon, because it's so bright. The gear I've got is kind of adapted for really, really faint stuff. Of course, the moon's so bright, you need to use different techniques, different settings, and perhaps even filters. So I'm kind of learning how to do that still.
So you're going to combine this Manvers Blue Moon swim then with trying to get some photos or anything?
Oh, no, I'll not be photographing on Sunday night.
Oh, no, I bet you'll be drinking, won't you, after the swim?
To be honest, photographing a full moon's kind of, it's not the best time to photograph the moon. Because you're getting a full reflection, you can't see craters, you can't see mountains the same. You're much better off photographing the moon as it's coming up to full or after it's past full, because you get better depth of field and shadows. So it's good to see them at the full moon, though. Nothing wrong with it. But you do get blinding eye as well because it's so bright.
Yeah.
But the other thing, it should be nice and warm. So it might be T-shirt weather. But the sky is not really dark enough at the moment to do deep sky photography. So I reckon about midnight-ish, you've probably got half an hour either side of midnight at the moment, perhaps up to 1 o'clock in the morning.
Is that all then?
Where you can do, this past week, 2 weeks, it's been cloudy, but when it has cleared a little, it's been so bright in the sky, I've struggled doing anything.
You can't win, can you?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. So during this, I'm doing other stuff like building an observatory from the back
out. Oh, are you? Hang on. What's happened to you? Were building something in your garage, weren't you? What's happened to that?
Yeah. Well, it's moved from my garage outside.
Oh, has so, it?
I'm taking probably 20 minutes, half an hour to set my gear up when I'm doing a photographic session. So when you see most people on the internet that have serious photography gear and series photos, they all tend to have observatories. So they've not all got domes. Some have got roll-off roofs. Some have got, like, flip-off roofs. Just so your gear's already set up.
Yeah.
So when you get a break in the clouds, and I've had this myself, I've set my gear up, gone out of the bath, gone back outside, ready to do some photography, and the clouds have rolled
Ooh.
In.
So
what you really need is something you can just, like, undo in a couple of minutes, and then you're away.
How things move on. So this rocket thing you were building then?
It's in my garage. My rocket's in my garage.
Oh, so you actually, what is your observatory then? Are you building that yourself? No,
it's like a shed. It's like a small square shed. It's going to have at the moment it'll have a flip off roof, but it might turn into a dome. So I'm going to leave it open ended so I can do something.
Oh, as it's gone down with the family then? Oh, great. We're going to have another shed in the garden, are we?
Well, my wife's got a summer house, so I reckon I can have an observatory.
Ooh, you must have a big garden, that's all I can say. But
oh, it's reasonable, it's reasonable.
But as you say, if it makes it easier, then it's all set up and it's safe and it's warm and it don't get dusty and you don't have to take things in and out and everything.
This is it. You do acquire gear and you need somewhere to keep your gear, and if it's all set up, it just improves your response time when those clouds part.
Brilliant. So, but make sure you I can see what's going to happen, Phil. You'll build this and then you'll go, but what I really need is something slightly bigger with a sofa in it or optics.
It'll be big enough for me to sit in it as well. I plan so I can get a chair in there and a bench to put me and put on my laptop and monitor.
An optic.
So this is what you're up to, because you can't view much in the sky, so you've had to find something else to entertain you. Well, you were telling me about the Blue Origin rocket.
Yes.
And we've tried to go online, but for some reason we've got no internet at the minute here, right, so yeah. We can't see it. But what happened then?
Yeah, so Friday night, they were doing a hot fire test on the pad. I forgot which pad it was now. It wasn't the Shuttle or the Artemis one, it was one of the other pads that they're using, and it basically, when they ignited it ignited the rocket instantaneously, and it all went up in flames. So it was quite a spectacular explosion. There's been loads of people photograph it away from Kennedy, like in hotels and
really
on boats. And it looks like a nuclear explosion. it was in an evening, so it was reasonably dark. It wasn't pitch black. And when they fired the engines up, I don't know what's happened. I don't know if it was a fuel leak or what, but it just exploded and it went up like a mushroom cloud. It looked like a nuclear explosion.
Wow. So was that due to be launched then at some point?
It was supposed to be a hot pad test where they set it up and go. I mean, it's been up and down. I think they've had three launches of this vehicle. Two have been successful. It's the one that takes off and comes back and lands vertically. So it's the biggest one they've made, and the engine's just blown up. So I don't know.
So this is what they're trying to send this to the moon then, are they?
Yes, this is the one that they're going to send to the moon, and then I think they're also going to use it to go on to Mars as well.
Oh dear, so that's quite an expensive explosion then.
Oh, very expensive explosion. But look, these things happen until they get 100% success rate.
Oh, it's Jeff Bezos's, it's his, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when you look back, NASA have been through exactly the same kind of learning curve where they have to test equipment and gradually they'll get it right eventually.
Wow, well...
It's like Space Shuttle, but Space Shuttle thought it was invincible. It was always a test vehicle, and it was always prone to having accidents, and it had two accidents. And this is a test vehicle that's developing now that will end up being like a commercial vehicle, but it's still in its development stage. And fortunately, there's nobody on board because they're still testing it and developing it. So I don't know what point they decide it's okay to fly. But obviously they've got some more testing to do.
Interesting. Well, Jeff Bezos has got loads of money, hasn't he? He's Amazon, isn't he? Mr. Amazon.
Yeah. So we can't take this space flight business for granted. It has a good success rate, but there's still development and there's still learning and there's still lots to do. It's all good stuff.
All to do with blue at the minute. So what else do we need to know about? What else is in the sky when it's dark enough to see?
Okay. Well, just going back to the moon. When the moon is due south on Sunday night, it'll be near the star Antares, which is a really, really bright red star. It's the fifth brightest star in the sky, and it will be at the side. It will be really close to the moon. So you even though the moon will be bright, you should still be able to see it.
Wow.
That'll be interesting to look at. And it's in the constellation of Scorpius, which is one of the constellations that's like really, really low in the ecliptic, which is why the moon is low in the sky, because it's in the ecliptic, below the ecliptic zone, and it's only line. So look out for that little red star that will be near the full moon. I think it should be on the right-hand side, but it'll be a bright red star. It's the fifth brightest star in the sky, so you should be able to see it even in the full moon. So that's 550 light years away.
So what are the other brightest stars then? And can you see them now?
Well, actually, if you look up from the moon, you'll be able to see another bright red star called Arcturus, which is in the constellation of Bootes. And then over to the left, you'll be able to see another bright star called Vega, which is in the constellation of Lyra. And then across from that to the left, there's a bright star Deneb in the constellation of Cygnus. And below that, there's Altair in the Eagle constellation. That forms a summer triangle, so it's kind of an asterism that you get in the summer sky. So yeah, there's some nice objects to look at. The only thing is, it's like midnightish when you can actually see them. You can see the stars in dusk because they're bright, but the constellations will only reveal themselves when it gets really late at night time. So like May, June, May, June, July, them kind of months where you're struggling to see the faint stuff in the sky, unless it's really late at night.
So when does it start to get better for you? As you go into autumn.
August.
So past the solstice then?
Yes, so that'll be on the 21st, 22nd of June. So yeah, the sun should then start getting lower and lower in the sky, and evenings get shorter.
And most people don't look forward to that, but you astrologers do. astronomers. You do, don't you? You're the ones going, oh, I wish it were dark.
I suppose it gives us a bit of a break. I mean, the planets are still good. I mean, after sunset, you can see Venus at the moment, which is really, really bright, and it's becoming into a phase, so it's a bit like a gibbous moon. So Venus is worth looking at with a telescope, and Jupiter's still up after Venus, which is another bright object. So Jupiter's still worth looking at as well. So you have got a couple of planets you can look at, and of course, it's a good time to look at the moon. So if the galaxies are a bit too faint for you to see, and the Messier objects, have a look at the moon and take some photographs of the different phases.
Yeah, you see, because you've been doing astronomy for years, so you're used to all this. This is just like normal viewing, isn't it? You want the exciting stuff, don't you, basically?
Yeah, I'm trying to push my telescope to photograph
to the limit.
Galaxies. And I got my first supernova last month as well. So there was a constellation, where is it, Cairns Venatici, just under the Big Dipper. There's a galaxy called the Splinter Galaxy, because it looks like a splinter, kind of edge on. And last month, a star exploded in that galaxy, and it was bright enough for me to pick it up in the telescope. So I had a go at it, magnitude 17, which is
faint.
That's
big. Is that faint?
That's faint. I can't see it through a telescope, but the camera picked it up. I think it picked it up after about something like 20 minutes exposure. It picked it up. So I'm doing exposures at the moment up to about half an hour, and that gets me a really good image of faint dark objects. So I couldn't have done it without this new technology I've got.
The new camera and setup. So a supernova is basically an exploded star then?
Yeah, so when some stars come to the end of their life, they get really heavy, they shrink fast, and then the shock waves causes a nuclear explosion.
Wow.
And they have like a chain reaction effect, and they explode. Now, some completely explode, and some explode and leave a neutron star, which is basically a star made of neutrons that spins really, really fast, and it gives off a radio signal that radio telescopes pick up.
Wow!
Like the Crab Nebula. So the Crab Nebula is M1, which is like a big cloud of gas, and it's got things like oxygen atoms inside of it. Because when you get hydrogen and helium condensing and exploding, you go on to heavier elements to produce things like oxygen that exist in the universe. So they all come from star death and go into forming new stars. So there's a neutron star in there that spins 33 times a second. And we get a pulse from that star.
Wow.
As it spins, and you can pick it up in the radio spectrum.
So is that how you knew about it then? You could detect it with your radio system?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's a specific. I've not done it with my radio setup, but I think they discovered it at Jodrell Bank, the pulsar in the Crab Nebula. But yeah, it's all interesting stuff. But yeah, anyway, this star's in another galaxy, so it is really faint because it's a long, long way away. I think it's more like 165 million light years away, so it's small and faint, but you can actually see it on the edge of the disk. So we've got a photograph on our webpage that I've taken, so you can actually see it.
Oh, have you? Hang on, we're going to have to go and check it out.
Have you not seen this?
Well, we'll have to go onto your website. We have got it as a link, so it's www.msas.org.uk.
Hang on.
Oh, is that your picture then?
Yeah.
From our gallery.
Yeah, and I've got it on my webpage.
Ooh, gone up in the world.
I must get this in as well before we go.
Go on.
We've also got a solar Sunday up at the observatory this week.
Yes.
31st of May. 11 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So if anybody wants to have a look at the sun safely,
will it be out though? Because I mean, after today, it's downhill apparently for the temperatures.
I don't know.
So is that do you book that online?
No, the observing section.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit, Phil. What are you doing?
Yeah, so you
that's
can
better.
Just turn up, and have a look through our equipment at the sun.
Hey, there's some great pictures on there. They're not all yours, are they? Nebulas.
No, not all mine.
Which one's yours? The one that's on the front page? Not that M1 Crab Nebula?
I don't know.
Oh, there's some great... there's some lovely pictures on there.
Well, that's what we like to hear.
Gary Gawthorpe.
Oh, no, it ain't yours on the website that's at top, Phil. It's somebody called Gary Gawthorpe.
Oh, Gary's... Yeah.
Has he kicked you off top spot then? What do you do? Some miss him and say, look at this.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Well, we've got some really good. I mean, there's better photographers in our club than me. I'm still learning.
Yeah, but it's all good fun, isn't it? They are tremendous. I know you do put stuff up on social media as well, which are amazing, aren't they? So, anything else you need to tell us? Is there any meteor showers? Anything else exciting?
I think the main thing this month is probably have a look at the full moon, blue moon. Have a look for Antares. And then Venus is well worth looking at, even as it's setting. Jupiter. And also try and have a look out for the Milky Way, because this next month the Milky Way is getting higher in the sky. It actually runs through constellation of Cygnus. Now in town you're going to struggle seeing the Milky Way, but if you're on holiday or in a good site or you're a dark site or traveling somewhere like, I don't know, like Wales or Lake District, you could possibly be able to pick out the Milky Way over this next 2 months.
Wow.
So that's worth looking at.
Well, if you're around, you're back on next Saturday, Phil.
Yes.
If you're up for it. Do you want to talk about the Milky Way then? What is the Milky Way? Is it complicated?
We could talk about it.
Is it a bit complicated?
No, well, we can make it simple.
We can what? You can make it up? Paul's trying to talk to me. And make it simple.
Where would you see it?
Paul's asking, where would you see the Milky Way? Which way do you have to look?
Well, it kind of, at the moment, it's kind of running kind of southeast to like north. But it's not directly straight overhead. It's a bit over to the eastern horizon. But it's like a band. It's a milky band of, Wow.
Yeah, we've seen it a few times. We've seen it once in Greece and a couple of times in the UK, and it is astonishing, isn't it? Because apparently it's there all the time, but you can't see it all the time, can you?
Because the sky's too bright. Yeah. When you get a dark sky, my best time for seeing the Milky Way was just off the coast of Crete on a cruise ship on the top deck. I fell over a lilo on the deck. It couldn't count on me knee.
Oh.
And while I was laid down, caressing my leg, stopping the blood running down my leg, I noticed the Milky Way in the sky, and
the pain went away.
And the pain went away.
It was absolutely mind blowing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and
when you see the Milky Way in its entirety in the centre of the galaxy, you can only imagine. What did them ancient people
think of
imagine
it?
Was in the sky. There's no wonder they believed in gods. And
yeah, because it is. You could just stare at it, couldn't you?
Yeah, I was lost. It took me quite a bit of time to work out what I was looking at because I was just lost in the millions and millions of stars.
And you'd forgotten that your leg were bleeding. Not a story. What you like, man? Anyway, good luck with the dragon boat racing this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Because you need to have
tomorrow.
A sleep.
It'll be tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. You need to have a sleep. You need to have a big sleep, Phil. Have a rest. Right, we'll speak to you next week, Phil. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
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 Bye.